Hey, how's it going? Welcome back to the Football Diary podcast once again. And we're deep in July now, so the transfer window is in full swing for most clubs in the Premier League, with the exception of Leicester City, who, as we record this, haven't signed anyone yet. So myself and Dave will be talking through why that might be, what that means for their season. But also Jesse Lingard, I think, is the headline of the week. He signed for Nottingham Forest for a free transfer, but reported £200,000 a week. Now, Jayling's kind of divides opinion at the best of times, doesn't he, Dave? But is this a good deal for Forest? Is it a good deal for Lingard? It's a reported 1-year deal as well, so he's definitely kind of testing the waters of whether Forest can actually stay in the Premier League, isn't he? But who wins out of this? Is it a good move?
That's a brilliant deal for Lingard. He wasn't even on that money at United. So to be on that money now and to only be at Forest for a year, personally, I think that's a little bit disrespectful in a way. Because if Forest go down, then they don't make any money off of that player, and they end up obviously shelling out all of that money in wages the year.
Well,
So.
I think some people have likened it to signing him on a lead, like a loan deal, basically. So they get him for a year on a reported sort of £7 million for the annual salary he'll be getting. And in that respect, it does sound quite a good deal, doesn't it? £7 million to loan Lingard for 1 year. And Dean Henderson's there actually on loan on a similar kind of salary as well. So they're actually spending a lot of money on two players there. Henderson's deal hasn't had any criticism at all, so maybe it's just because Lingard is Lingard that he's getting more criticism for his move. But you're right, he kind of can't lose, can he, Lingard? He's testing the water with Forest to see whether it's the right move for him. If they stay up, he's on good money. But how are you going to feel as a Forest player, seeing both those players on those wages sitting alongside you in the dressing room?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those players, a lot of the Forest players are quite new to the Premier League. So I don't know if they will kind of feel a bit disheartened by it. Because obviously, look at Dean Henderson, who's, had plenty of experience in the Premier League with Sheffield United and Man United. And obviously, Lingard's, played for United for a number of years and played for West Ham, put a really good few performances in for them last year. So I think the only way it can backfire on Lingard is if he goes there and doesn't make an impact at all, then after this year's up, there won't be that many clubs queuing up for him. What is he now? I think he turns 30 soon as well.
Yeah.
He really kind of has to go there and, stamp his authority on that team, because if he doesn't, then, there's going to be a lack of suitors, I think, for him next year if Forest do go down and he does move elsewhere. That's I think that's probably the only way it can backfire, and I think it'll be a good asset to them. I think he will make a good impact, and what depending on the rest of the transfer window and where Forest go, because obviously they've just lost Jed Spence as well. So I'll be interested to see what they do with the full-back areas.
Yeah, Forest, I think, have signed 11 players now as well. So they are taking on quite a few players in one go, aren't they? They're really hedging their bets for Premier League survival, it would seem. But I think from a Lingard point of view, I don't know about you, but I had him nailed on as West Ham's new signing on free. I thought he was obviously picture perfect for them. He was tailor-made for their needs. Wouldn't be like a new signing in some ways, would it? It'd be like a player coming back. So how must West Ham be feeling? Because that would be a better fit for him, I think, in terms of like maybe World Cup aspirations for this season. But instead, he's chosen Forest. Is it all about money, or is there more to it than that?
It's come out they're saying they didn't want a bidding war, which is basically telling you that they weren't offering the wages that obviously Forest are, which is, completely fair. Because you will have a lot of West Ham, a lot of those players, especially in West Ham's team, that are proven Premier League players. And you can imagine it create probably quite a bit of animosity and tension in the dressing room if somebody's coming in and getting paid 200,000 a week. And probably not doing much more than what you are, like the likes of Jarrod Bowen. I can't imagine he's probably over, but I imagine he's probably over 100 grand a week, but probably not much more than that, if that. So, I think that's that's the what it came down to, really. And I'm fair play to West Ham. I'm glad they've not kind of forked it up, really, because I just felt like that would be a little bit unjust for the rest of the squad.
I've got a feeling this is kind of more like a vanity move for the Nottingham Forest owners in some ways, because that 200 grand figure, if it is true, is a heck of a lot for a player of Lingard's ability. He's very good, don't get me wrong, but like you say, it's a pay rise from his Man United days, isn't it? So if they just plucked a number out of thin air, hoping that would be enough to attract Lingard, could they have got away with less money for him as well? It feels like the only person winning out of this is Jesse Lingard himself, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit like that. I think if he'd gone to West Ham, I mean, I don't really know what his aspirations are. You mentioned there of him trying to make the England squad. There's no chance he's going to be in that England squad for the World Cup. Absolutely no chance. The amount of quality that we've got now in that squad, I just can't see them there being a slot for Lingard. I mean, I can eat my hat if it does happen, but I can't see that happening. But yeah, it kind of begs the question, really, what his incentive kind of is, really. He just wants to go out there, and the thing is, you say he's a very good player. He's been very good in spells. Don't mean you don't know what you're going to get with him at times. So it's a little bit like he's a bit of an enigma. You could kind of compare him to Pogba in that aspect, in that you really don't know what you're going to get from them. And we'll see what happens. I hope he does well, because I want Forrest to do well. I'm not a fan of all of his, you know, social media presence and all that nonsense. A little bit cringeworthy, but each to their own.
Yeah, I think the pictures of him at the City Ground with his J-Ling's shirt on were a bit cringe, weren't they? The guy's nearly 30. I think that sort of winds some fans up. It's okay when he's on your team, isn't it? Because it just feels like if he's performing, then it's all good natured. And I think when he was doing dances, celebrating goals at United, and people slating him for it, I'm okay with that. You know, if you're scoring decent, important goals, then fair enough. But yeah, he's got a challenge, I think, to try and establish Forest as a Premier League team again. So a year's deal really does suit him, doesn't it? As for the World Cup, yeah, I think that's probably out of reach. I don't know if he feels like he's still got delusions of maybe getting into Gareth Southgate's thoughts. But if you think about when he did get into the West Ham team on loan, he performed almost instantly, didn't he? So he can have that kind of impact if you play him in the right position. And I think Forrest will. And that's not kind of beat around the bush. Forrest have signed a lot of players, so they needed experience as well to kind of make them settle in a bit more in the Premier League. So it does feel divisive, doesn't it? I've heard opinions on both sides of this Lingard argument, that it's a great move for Forest, it's a great move for Lingard. It's also an absolutely terrible financial move for Forest, and really greedy for Lingard to take this kind of money from them. So, yeah, it's a strange one. Forest, like I said, have signed about 11 players so far this transfer window, so they're going all in. I hope they do okay, to be fair, because you don't want to see clubs yo-yo in between divisions, especially when it's taken them so long to get back there as well. But another club that haven't signed anyone yet, Dave, is Leicester City. So that's our local team. We keep quite a close eye on their progress, don't we?
Do they
need anyone? I mean, everyone kind of criticised them for finishing eighth last season, but I thought that was a decent finish for them. And they've got a lot of players coming back from injury as well. So for Leicester fans, right to be worried?
I mean, considering how the start of the season was, and like the first half of the season was a bit of a disaster for them, really. They finished quite strong, didn't they? And we were quite surprised how close they were to some of the teams around them, above them, namely United as well. You were looking at you thinking, I think they only finished about 5 points off or something like that. And you were just thinking, you know, that's mental, really. considering how both teams were at certain points in the season. But yeah, they've got a lot of players. The only worry for me, really, is that they seem to have a lot of injury prone players. And the amount of problems that players have had, particularly over the last year, Fofana, obviously Pereira's been out at spells,
yeah,
obviously Justin, He's been another one who's been out on for a long spell, and have had those issues in the defence where they've not been quite able to find a setup back there that, you know, nullifies set pieces in particular. You know, how many times did we sort of speak about that last year? So
every week.
I think obviously there's a lot of talks around Tielemans still as well. What's going to happen there? There's a bit of talk whether he might actually sign another contract. Who knows? It seems like Arsenal have been after him for ages, and I just can't understand really why they've not signed him by now if they are actually after him. Because it
I've
almost
not heard anyone linked with him apart from Arsenal either, which is a surprise.
There has been a bit. I think there's been a bit of chatter around United for him if they don't get De Jong, and Ten Hag being a little bit of a fan. But I don't know. It just seems like United's name gets linked to every player these days just to drop interest in players. But yeah, I feel as though there's a few players in there I've got a bit of a point to prove. Madison had a good strong finish to last season. Ndidi was another one who got injured for a good spell last year. He's obviously coming back, and we were talking about whether he was going to get a big move at some point. And now he kind of needs a little bit of a revival, so to speak, just to kind of get in and start playing some football week in, week out again. I don't know. Like you mentioned, Mike, I don't know if there is a case of obviously whether it's financial fair play and they are looking to sell a few players before they go on. And I'm sure they've got, you know, targets in their sights. I think it's just those and just Leicester and one other club in Europe who've not bought a player, apparently.
Yeah. The Athletic reported that Leicester are looking to sell before they can buy. So the financial reality is they've got too high a wage bill at the moment. So they can't bring anyone unless they lose one of those major wage earners. Or do what they do every few seasons and just sell one of their like prime players. So I'm talking, you know, the likes of Harvey Barnes has been linked to Newcastle for like 50 plus million pounds. James Justin's kind of hot property at the minute. James Maddison, obviously. Tielemans, what fee would he fetch at the minute going into the last year of his contract?
They've not bought Luckman on permanent yet, have they? I know there was talk about it.
No, they've not, no.
There's
a lot of reasons why they can't move the players, and I think it's a bit of a stalemate at the minute. It must be quite frustrating. But my question for you is, you talked about Leicester's kind of 50-50 season last year where they started really poorly because of injuries but then finished really strongly and ended up in eighth. They are kind of the eighth best team in the country though, right? That's kind of a reflection of where they are. I can see them doing that again with the squad they've got.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned there actually is about the wages. I can imagine there's a few players there, like, for instance, Vardy. I bet he's on a big, big wage. Especially his last renewal, obviously, was around the time when I think Arsenal were trying to sign him and he decided to stay at Leicester. I can imagine probably on around 200 grand a week. So that's you know, a big sum. Don't want to be disrespectful to Leicester, but that is a sum that, you know, a top four player should be earning, really. I mean, that's understandable really if they have got issues, you know, surrounding their wage bill, and obviously something they need to resolve.
But as it stands though, I think Leicester's squad isn't as kind of weak as some people are making out. Definitely not. I don't know if you feel the same.
No, they've got so many options, particularly in defence. They've got, you know, the amount of wing backs they've got that I'd happily have at United. I'd probably have any of their wing backs at United, and there'd be an improvement over most of ours. And the front areas, obviously, they've got Daka, who they bought last year. They've still got Vardy there. They've got Iheanacho. So, yeah, they've got plenty of options. It's just they really lacked consistency last year, and I can see them. They are a similar sort of team, I think, at the minute to Villa, although I don't think Villa quite kind of made that step up. I think Leicester is probably slightly a little bit better. But I think they'll have a similar season to Villa.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're in that kind of catchment area just below the top six, aren't they? Where they could finish anywhere between 8th and 12th. And I think Newcastle are one of the other teams, and there's a couple others that are very similar in sort of stature and squad size. But I think Leicester are the most consistent Premier League team out of that bunch of teams. And we've said a couple of seasons now in a row, they could easily qualify for Champions League if they really invested. So it's frustrating to see them not like strengthening their squad. But I guess in some ways, keeping the players they've got is kind of maintaining that, which is good. And they are still developing, still growing. I do think we'll see more of James Justin on the international stage, definitely. Harvey Barnes will make that breakthrough soon as well. So their values will increase too. So I think Brendan Rodgers is kind of like a victim of his own success and Leicester's. You know, they've done so well in recent seasons that the expectation's really high. So finishing 8th feels like a disappointment because you think, you know, they were so close to Champions League football for 2 seasons in a row. They just missed out, didn't they? Just on points at the end of the season and not finishing the season very strongly. So they are a fantastically consistent team. 8th is about where they're at. If they were to finish 8th, 7th, 6th this season, they'd be absolutely thrilled, I think, and have a nice cup run to go with it. So, yeah, I think the expectation on Leicester has grown massively. And they're hosting the Community Shield, aren't they, this weekend coming, which is
Yeah.
mad.
Yeah, that'll be a good one to
So,
watch.
as a city.
Like you mentioned there, when to watch them play, and when they play well, they actually play really good football and they're a great team to watch. You know, they score a lot of goals as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to see how they fare this season, and I kind of hope that, you know, they are a little bit more consistent. But like you mentioned there, I can't see them kind of breaching sick. To be honest, I think that probably I'd be surprised if they got 6th or 7th, basically. I think
There's a
with,
couple of teams that have overtaken them in that respect, really, isn't there?
yeah, I mean, you know, the likes of Tottenham, Arsenal
Yeah.
potentially, this season, they'll be, you know, behind them. We'll see what happens with United. That'd be an interesting one too.
Yeah. Well, that moves me on nicely to my next topic, actually. I haven't actually got your thoughts on the Erik ten Hag regime so far. They've obviously had a pre-season tour, which has gone largely pretty successfully, apart from the 2-2 draw with Aston Villa. They've done all right, and a few players have performed really well. Tyrell Malacia is the only player, new player, that's appeared on the tour because Eriksen came later. So it's been an interesting pre-season for assessing a few players, and the forward players have all played pretty well, haven't they? What's your thoughts on pre-season for United so far? What have you made from it all?
I think the thing that's kind of stood out to me is that there seems to be a system in place now, or there seems to be a good understanding of, you know, how Ten Hag wants them to play. So it's encouraging for me that it seems like the players are able to understand and know to kind of some degree what's expected of them, because obviously when Rangnick came in, it seemed as though he wanted the players to play in a certain way, and they didn't really know what they should be doing, where they should be. It appears that Ten Hag has got everything in place, and you know he's mentioned that he's seen some progress in the 2 weeks. And let's remember that he's only been with these players for a couple of weeks, coming up to 3 weeks now.
Right.
So I think from what we've seen, even though it's pre-season, I think it's really encouraging. And some of the goals that have been scored, I don't know if what you have seen, Mark, but it's been very much team based. There's not really been a great deal of individual, you know, spectacular goals. It's all been, you know, passing into play around the box, patient play, keeping a hold of possession in certain areas. But obviously, the last game against Villa, I saw the first half, didn't see the second, but I heard that. Obviously, United made a lot of changes around 55th, 60th minute, and it was the younger team that came in. And there were individual mistakes for the goals, one being Lindelof and then the other being De Gea for the corner, which I saw the goals, I just didn't see the whole second half. So,
Yeah.
and also, Pienaar came out, the encouraging thing, he came out at the end of the game and just says it's obviously not acceptable to, you know, being so lackadaisical in those moments. And, you know, there's no room for complacency, basically, and that's what we want to hear. And I think the important thing is you don't really want to go through a pre-season without having a couple of mistakes or, you know, a blip where the players can actually, you know, kind of hear from Ten Hag and how he reacts in those instances when everything isn't quite going to plan. And because they do really kind of need to know sort of, you know, how he deals in with those particular moments and learn from it before obviously the season begins. And it sounds as though like all the right noises are coming from the dressing room. Players are saying off sleeves, you know, if you get on the wrong side of him, you'll be punished, basically. And, you know, that's how it should be. And it's not really been the case in the past because players have been think they're bigger than the managers in the past. We've seen it, you know, with the likes of Mourinho. We've seen it with, you know, Van Gaal. There's been so many leaks and that have come out as well, which has just been infuriating. So I'm glad, like, I'm happy. I'm really happy with what I've seen, and I just hope that we can get a few more players in now, because the only thing that worries me really is the depth. The squad depth that we've got too many. If you look at the starting 11 that we started against Villa and the players that are on the bench, they were just largely young, you know, young up and coming players. A few of them on loan last year, the likes of Ahmad Palistri, and obviously the likes of Iqbal and Savage, who are completely new to the team. We do need a lot of investment in, you know, depth and quality, because if we only takes us to get a couple of injuries and we're in a lot of trouble. So we'll see what happens. It looks like we'll probably get two or three more players personally.
I think the ball started rolling now with transfers, which is good to see. So two things I've noticed from the tour for United anyway. The first one is the kind of figure Ten Hag has become. He's quite to the point in his media briefings, isn't he? He's very like succinct with his answers, and it might be a mixture of like his English not being amazing, but I think that works in his favour because he doesn't say too much and he cuts the press off when they try and sort of probe too closely about things like Cristiano Ronaldo, for example. So he's not giving much away, and he's almost got like this kind of aura of being quite a stern kind of invigilator when he's watching training. So I don't know if you've seen any footage of the guys training in the tour as well. He's right in there watching everything that's going on, berating anybody that's making the wrong pass and really sort of saying the kind of football he wants to see. And everybody knows their place at the moment. It's like you said, they're coached now. But essentially, the system he's been playing has been a kind of an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer system with the kind of players that he wanted to employ. So a front line of Sancho, Rashford and Martial. But he's playing in a way that actually makes sense. It's not just kind of hit it up front and hope. And I think the biggest beneficiary of that so far has been Marcus Rashford to an extent. Jadon Sancho actually has been really kind of chipping in with goals as well. But then Anthony Martial suddenly looks like the main figure up front. So can you actually see that turnaround happening for him?
8 years he's been at the club. He's 2 years away from a...
testimonial match. Yeah, that's insane, isn't it?
What I've seen from him, it just seems to be one of those players, doesn't it, Martial? We know he's a good player. And, you know, how many times has it been said over the years? It's just the application and the mental side of the game, which he's kind of not put together with his talent. Ten Hag's obviously said now, hasn't he? He said it's up to him. You know, he's a good player. He just needs to focus. He needs the right focus. And he obviously knows that. He obviously, what he's seen in training, he's been encouraged by it. And we've seen it a lot before. It's just, you know, some days it seems like he gets out of bed and he doesn't want to play football.
He's an incredible player on his day. His football brain's brilliant, isn't it? And I think that's where having somebody like Christian Eriksen around the midfield, especially, will pick out players like him. And me and Miles talked about it in the pod recently. But Christian Eriksen, where can you see him fitting in? Can you see him as a deep line playmaker in the centre of midfield? Or can you see him playing like a number 10 role like Fernandes, alternating with him?
Yeah, I think he can obviously play both of those roles. I think it really depends on who we get in midfield, because I can't see him... I can probably see him playing alongside Fred.
Yeah.
Can't see him playing with McTominay. McTominay just doesn't have the positional awareness and the defensive awareness to sit in there, really. We'd be taken apart. I could see him working with Fred and maybe Bruno. I think Ten Hag likes a midfield three. It almost seems kind of like the three forwards who he has. It almost seems like that centre forward kind of drops in a little bit, almost like a 10 sometimes.
True.
It does depend who we get in. We will get a midfielder. There's no chance we don't go and get a midfielder. Even if we don't sign De Jong, it has to happen because we're just so light in that area. We've kind of obviously addressed obviously defence now. We've got a centre-back in. Another thing who I'd say is who's performed really well this pre-season, but Eric Bailly has been so good again. He's another enigma who just, you know, he's had so many injuries. He's an absolute beast on his day. He played so good against Liverpool. Did you see the goal, the Pellistri goal? Where he ran through the field and made the assist pretty much. If Bailly was fit, I'd happy to have him as one of the backup centre backs. We've almost got a bit of an issue now at centre back where we've got so many centre backs.
Yeah.
You know, we've got Varane, we've got Maguire, we've got Martinez who's going to come in. Looks like Martinez will come in, I think, on, you know, that right side. It's just a matter of who he partners, really. It probably will be Maguire because obviously Ten Hag said he's going to be the captain.
Yeah, so I think that's a statement for him to keep him as captain as well. But you're right, we've got so many centre-backs. Lisandro Martinez, though, looks like the kind of player that United have had in the past. You know, a bit of a nasty kind of shithouse, basically. In the mould of like Marcus Rojo, doesn't take any crap off anybody. But he's actually a good player for once, rather than just being a bit of a nuisance. That as well, because we need that kind of character in the team.
A lot of people are compared him to someone in the mould of Daley Blind, who is so good on the ball, you know. And Martinez, he has played in midfield in the past, and you know he's more than good enough on the ball. He's probably going to be one of the best ball playing centre backs in the league. From what I've seen, really, so he's obviously been really impressive. Performed really well against Haaland last year, where obviously Ajax beat Dortmund and, you know, completely bossed it. So I'm excited to see what he can do. I'm a bit frustrated that they've not been able to kind of get in a little bit earlier and we're able to see them kind of on the tour.
Yeah.
But as we know in the past, United, they're not quick at resolving the transfer business or sorting their transfer business.
No. Well, one team that has resolved their transfer business pretty quickly is Man City. So they've obviously made some very clinical signings, but they've balanced the books really well. I think their net spend's going to be very close to zero this summer, isn't it? Having sold the players they've sold. Now they've now announced that Alexander Zinchenko is going to Arsenal. The second player going to them this summer after Gabriel Jesus, of course. Now, do Man City just see that as a really cocky kind of, we can give Arsenal these players, but they're not going to catch us for the title? Whilst also balancing the books, is it smart business for them, do you think, or are they genuinely strengthening a rival?
I think Zinchenko strengthens Arsenal. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's, you know, a massive loss for City. He's a good squad player for them, definitely. But I just feel as though he's... I don't want to say not good enough for Man City, but I just feel as though they've got better players in their team. They can afford to lose him. We've seen it in the past with Man City. They've had players that, you know, they've lost, and kind of almost a little bit surprised about it at first, but then you think, you know, look what they've already got and look what they probably will look to get in. I mean, there's talks of Bernardo Silva leaving, isn't there, and going to Barcelona. And, you know, you'd be surprised about that, but look at the players that they've still got there. So, I mean, I think he's a great player. I like Zinchenko. I think he's really good going forward. He will kind of complement how Arsenal will want to play as well. You know, they play some good football, and he'll be a good addition for them. It's just he's not, for me, going to be an elite player. He's still relatively young. I don't think he's going to be, you know, one of the best fullbacks in the world at any point. Because he does, you know, there was a couple of games, we saw it last year, where he was at fault for, you know, a few goals where Man City conceded a few goals. He's a little bit vulnerable defensively. So those are the kind of, I think what he does need to improve on. And let's be honest, Arsenal aren't blessed with defensive ability. Obviously a big improvement last year compared to what we've seen in the past. But obviously they are still a little bit leaky in moments. But obviously Arteta knows what he can expect from him. He's worked with him, obviously, along with Guardiola. So I'm sure he's kind of got them on side, along with Jesus as well, who I think is a good addition for them. Obviously, they just beat Chelsea 4-0 in pre-season as well, and obviously Tuchel wasn't too happy about that, was he? But I'm sure there's plenty of, you know, to be optimistic about for Arsenal fans, definitely.
Yeah, I just think it's crazy how Man City can lose Raheem Sterling, Alexander Zinchenko, and you know, still doesn't make a dent. Gabriel Jesus doesn't stop them from being title favourites. It just shows how far ahead they were last season, doesn't it? Insane. But they're balancing the books, and they don't actually need to, but financial fair play, they're actually taking note of. So, you know, all play City is a pretty good window for them all in all. Another team I think has had a really good window is Bayern Munich on that note, because they got rid of Lewandowski. But they've signed De Ligt as well. They've signed Mane. So I think they're a pretty decent sort of transfer business this season. Anyone stand out for you in the transfer market?
I thought we'd see a bit more business than what we have done. It seems like it's just starting to kind of heat up a little bit now. Obviously, you'd like to see I want to see what's going to happen with Ronaldo. I want that resolved, because it just seems to be a bit of a circus at the moment. I think something's come out this afternoon saying that there's going to be a meeting between them. There's going to be something sorted out. So if he does leave United, we'll need to get a striker in as well.
Yeah.
Or a front man, somebody you can kind of play sort of all along the front line.
Yeah.
Liverpool, they're one, obviously they've done their business, they did a lot of their business relatively early, didn't they? Obviously Nunez has come in. I'm just interested to see how they're going to play this year, because obviously he's a big change really. I think Carvalho is a brilliant signing for them from Fulham. I'm so surprised that they got him at such a low figure. Because when I've seen him, he's, you know, he looks quite a bit, he plays a little bit like Coutinho in his play style. He's so good on the ball, and I would have liked to see someone like that at United, to be honest. But like you mentioned, there's still a few, like Chelsea seem to be going on as well. There's a lot, obviously, they're trying to sort out defenders. Obviously, they just have bought Koulibaly in, haven't they? It seems like they've been on the case of Koundé for years. That's one story you kind of sick of hearing about.
That and beyond, I think that's the story of the summer, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Koulibaly, let's start with him. I think that's a really good addition, to be honest. And for the price, quite about 31 million, isn't it? Is he 30, 31?
It's 31. 30. It's the most expensive player over 30 in football history now.
So, yeah, I mean, we've seen what he can do with Napoli over the years. The amount of times he's been quoted with, you know, linked to these top four teams, United, he's been linked with over the years. The 80-plus million you're looking at and you're thinking it's never going to happen. He's finally made a move to the Premier League. I think he's a great addition. Obviously, with Chelsea, they have lost a couple of defenders. It looks like Azpilicueta wants to leave as well, whether he'll be allowed to or not, another thing. So, yeah, I think Sterling will be a good addition. You obviously what you mentioned there as well.
Yeah.
What do you think? What who stands out for you a little bit in terms of?
Well, I said I was impressed with Spurs' business getting Richarlison and Bissouma. I thought was a good signing for 25 million, and Perisic as well seems like a very Conte signing. So they've done okay. Bayern Munich, I think, had to wait for Lewandowski to go, and they've upgraded with Mane. Mane's a brilliant addition. I think Liverpool will feel the loss of Mane, definitely. I don't think Luis Diaz is going to quite provide what he provided in the team. So that concerns me for Liverpool, that they've kind of weakened themselves a bit. But Mane had ambitions that he's already exceeded at Liverpool, and he wanted to do it elsewhere before he gets too kind of old. So I kind of understand that. So yeah, Bayern Munich, good business. Barcelona, we talked about this last week, me and Miles. I can't get my head around Barcelona's business at all. I mean, they've made some smart moves, but again, they're just funding it out of thin air. So that seems a really crazy scenario. That could all blow up in their face, couldn't it?
I think it's they've got some nerve, haven't they, to say to you need to have 50% wage decrease, but we're going to shell out 50 million for Lewandowski. We're going to use that money to sign Kessié and Christensen, who they couldn't afford to register before. They're also just got all this money from the financial levers, which they've obviously activated. So I just think that's so poor on their behalf.
Yeah. Couple of things before we do wrap up, because I think we're about done for transfers now. But just a big kind of good luck to the Lionesses, who are in the semi-final of the Women's Euros on Tuesday night. We're recording this on the Monday, so you know they've really done well to get as far as they have. They just need to end that semi-final hoodoo. That's the third in a row they could potentially lose, which we don't want. And also just a shout out to Sebastien Haller, who's been diagnosed with a testicular lump, and he's had an operation to have that removed on his move to Dortmund. So, you know, not the ideal start for him, but I think everyone wishes him kind of a quick recovery and hopefully see him in the Bundesliga as soon as he's fit and ready. But other than that, Dave, no other business to talk about. Appreciate you joining me today. Whilst you're here, guys, can you please hit subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube, or give us a follow if you can on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening or watching this. That'd be such a support for us. But Dave, in the meantime, mate, hopefully see you next week if that's all right with you.
Yes, see you then.
Nice one. See you soon. Take care.